Now that W.H. Auden has turned 100, he has finally slowed down enough for us to see him clearly. A prolific poet, critic, playwright, librettist, and moral philosopher, Auden wrote enough irreplaceable work to earn a major reputation in half a dozen fields. Auden has never lacked for admirers. Nobel laureate Josef Brodsky praised him as the greatest mind of the 20th century, and many consider him the finest British poet of the modern age. But the prodigious range and variety of his endeavors, as well as the sheer velocity of his intellectual and spiritual development, make it impossible to characterize him easily. In Leaves of Grass, Walt Whitman once boasted, "Do I contradict myself? Very well, then, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes." He could have been describing Auden. In his celebrated elegy for William Butler Yeats, Auden used a strikingly earthy metaphor for the nature of posthumous literary fame. "The words of a dead man," he wrote, "are modified in the guts of the living." So it's not surprising that only now, 34 years after the poet's death, that the literary world has finally begun to digest the abundant banquet of his legacy. Whiston Hugh Auden had the blessing and curse to become famous from the start. At 23, T.S. Eliot published Auden's first collection, and he was soon recognized as both the major new poet and chief literary influence of the 1930s. This state of affairs did not surprise the poet. It was exactly what he had intended. A bright and happy child from a loving family, Auden never lacked confidence. At Oxford, he told his tutor that he planned to be a poet. When the poor fellow offered his new student some conventional advice, the young Whiston interrupted him, "I mean a great poet." By his 30th birthday, the poet's name had already become an adjective, and his contemporaries were termed the Auden Generation. A year later, he had the good sense to escape the velvet prison of celebrity by fleeing closely-knit literary London for the relative anonymity of New York. In 1946, he became an American citizen. Auden's artistic career is characterized by changes, philosophical, stylistic, and personal. He traveled constantly as a young man, from Iceland to China, with every new experience filtering into his poetry. He seemed to reinvent himself every 5 years, assimilating the lessons of public history and personal experience into a new creative identity. He would also occasionally renounce his earlier ideas as mistakes, often revising his poems to reflect his new beliefs and even preventing them, including some of his best work like September 1, 1939, from being reprinted. In the latest edition of Auden's collected poems, the list of works dropped by the author still runs 3 pages. Today we recognize this restless exploration and unabashed self-criticism as a sign of Auden's greatness. He had a passionate commitment for truth, even when it came at his own expense. But his early readers often felt otherwise. Fans of one period of his work often felt betrayed by the next one. Others attacked him for ideas he had already discarded. His critics were often savage, sometimes making thinly veiled insults about his homosexuality or mocking his return to Anglicanism. George Orwell called him a sort of gutless Kipling. Members of Parliament condemned him for remaining in the United States after the start of World War II. With equanimity and self-confidence, Auden took it all in stride. When the poet Randall Jarrell extravagantly attacked Auden's desertion of Freud and Marx for Christianity, Auden informed his friends that Jarrell couldn't help himself because he was in love with Auden. This small, perhaps silly remark is deeply revealing. How many writers respond to a bad review by believing it was motivated by love? Love is the central idea of Auden's diverse and protean career. He pondered love in all its forms, parental, sexual, altruistic, egotistic, and divine. Notwithstanding the sharp critical intelligence and satiric bite that characterizes his work, there is an unmistakable generosity and goodwill that suffuses his imagination. "All the poems I have written," Auden claimed, "were written for love." several generations of readers have responded in kind. There are a great many reasons to admire Auden's poetry. When I first read it back in the mid-1960s as a teenager in Los Angeles, I was attracted by at least three things: its music, its great sense of fun, and its intelligence. Poetry is primarily an auditory musical art. Great poems, like great songs, cast a spell over their listeners to create a heightened sense of attention and receptivity. As a teenager, it never occurred to me that I would be a poet. I planned to be a musician. Auden's poetry, unlike that of any other living poet, had a strange beauty that enchanted me with its remarkable tunefulness and the sheer physicality of its language. In experiential terms, Auden's poetry had less to do with the poems we tediously analyzed in English class than the songs we heard on the radio. Unlike other modernists, the Apollonian Wallace Stevens, for instance, Auden's poems didn't seem forbiddingly literary. Though superior in kind, his work bore a family resemblance to the lyrics I heard from the Byrds, the Beatles, the Beach Boys, and Bob Dylan. His poems didn't enter from the eye and go to the brain. They came through the ear and went to the heart. It took me decades to understand why. There was a method in his musicality. Like nearly all pop music, no matter what its stated subject, most of Auden's poems are love songs. I don't think I'm being subjective in comparing Auden's poems to songs. That is exactly what he titled dozens of his poems. Listen to this early song. Its combination of rhyme, meter, and structured alliteration creates a sort of acrobatic verbal music that defies paraphrase. The only adequate description is to read the poem aloud.
"Oh, where are you going?" said reader to rider. "That valley is fatal where furnaces burn. Yonder's the midden whose odors will madden. That gap is the grave where the tall return." "Oh, do you imagine," said fearer to fairer, "that dusk will delay on your path to the pass? Your diligent looking discover the lacking, your footsteps feel from granite to grass." "Oh, what was that bird?" said horror to hearer. "Did you see that shape in the twisted trees? Behind you swiftly, the figure comes softly. The spot on your skin is a shocking disease." "Out of this house," said rider to reader. "Yours never will," said fairer to fearer. "They're looking for you," said hearer to horror, as he left them there, as he left them there.
When I first read the poem at 16, I had no idea what it meant, at least in abstract terms, but it grabbed me like one of the Beethoven sonatas I was trying to learn on the piano, and took me on a journey with Auden's rider across a dreamlike landscape of both hopes and fears, so that I felt the meaning in ways more intense than mere ideas could generate. This poem presents a serious psychic drama, how the bold and fearful aspects of ourselves fight for dominance. The rider, the farer, and the hearer must reject the terrified passivity of their weak counterparts, the reader, the fearer, and the horror, in order to leave the world of everyday safety and begin a journey of discovery. But the serious theme of the poem is presented with such fun. We cross the poem's nightmarish terrain to the galloping beat of a nursery rhyme. The names of the opposing characters, the reader and writer, the fearer and farer, the hearer and horror, border on puns. Even the narrative structure works like an acrostic puzzle. Auden's poems are so often such fun to read, to recite, to remember, to imitate, to emulate. Sometimes the fun is in the subject itself. More often, the pleasure is stitched into the very verbal fabric of the lines. Reading such poems, even ones on deeply serious subjects, we experience the particular joy of words so intricately arranged that their secret harmonies become tangible. As Robert Frost said, all the fun is in how you say a thing. And even Auden's most serious work employs pleasure as the most reliable means to enlightenment. This early poem is also a work of deliberate and joyful virtuosity. The poet sets up a series of intimidatingly difficult obstacles and then effortlessly masters them. It's like watching a great dancer seemingly defy the law of gravity. The performance fills us with exhilaration at the possibilities of human expression. A great artist should, at least on occasion, be a show-off. What makes Auden great is that he can do things the rest of us can't. Listen to another early song by Auden, an apocalyptic number titled Doomsday Song. There are many things to point out in this mesmerizing poem, but I want to note just one. Its rhyme scheme uses only three sounds over and over again: ox, I, and un. Doomsday Song displays shameless bravado. The end of the world is not supposed to be so much fun.
Jumbled in one common box of their dark stupidity, Orchid, Swan, and Caesar lie. Time that tires of everyone has corroded all the locks, thrown away the key for fun. In its cleft, a torrent mocks prophets who in days gone by made a profit on each cry, persona grata now with none, and a jackass language shocks poets who can only pun. Silence settles on the clocks, nursing mothers point a sly index finger at a sky, crimson in the setting sun. In the valley of the fox gleams the barrel of a gun. Once we could have made the docks, now it is too late to fly. Once too often, you and I did what we should not have done. Round the rampant, rugged rocks, rude and ragged rascals run.
Fun and musicality are essential virtues for poetry, but they are no sure claim to greatness. There are many memorable poems in our language that create powerful music and genuine delight while expressing simplistic or even numbskull ideas. I love the verbal enchantments of Swinburne, but no one would claim he had a first-class mind. It was Auden's particular achievement to embody his full intelligence, and what an alert, quick, and capacious mind it was in irresistible and unforgettable language. Intelligence has a dubious reputation in poetry, probably for a good reason, since it so often gets in the way of intuition, feeling, and imagination. But in his best poems, Auden's extraordinary intelligence never detaches itself from emotions. He analyzes what he feels, which are often contradictory impulses, with imaginative brilliance and penetrating candor. Auden's honesty is sometimes astonishing. Another poet might well begin a love poem by saying, "Lay your sleeping head, my love." But who else but Auden would follow with the second line, "Human on my faithless arm"? A great mind is one that recognizes, identifies, and reconciles the evident contradictions of existence. Auden's penetrating intelligence, or to use a better, more venerable word, his wisdom, is never more apparent than when he uses paradox to convey the troubling secrets of the human condition. Listen to his mysterious love poem Lullaby, in which he suggests that individual erotic love, despite its potentially transitory and unstable nature, may bring one closer to universal platonic love than does philosophical detachment. In fact, Auden believes that it is precisely the instability and uncertainty of that mortal, guilty sexual love that makes us recognize our common human imperfection. As he says elsewhere, "You must love your crooked neighbor with your crooked heart." Here, then, is one last poem with a musical title, Lullaby.
Lay your sleeping head, my love, human on my faithless arm. Time and fevers burn away individual beauty from thoughtful children, and the grave proves the child ephemeral. But in my arms till break of day, let the living creature lie, mortal, guilty, but to me the entirely beautiful. Soul and body have no bounds. To lovers as they lie upon her tolerant, enchanted slope in their ordinary swoon, grave the vision Venus sends of supernatural sympathy, universal love and hope. While an abstract insight wakes among the glaciers and the rocks, the hermit's carnal ecstasy. Certainty, fidelity, on the stroke of midnight pass like vibrations of a bell, and fashionable madmen raise their pedantic, boring cry. Every farthing of the cost, all the dreaded cards foretell, shall be paid. But from this night, not a whisper, not a thought, not a kiss nor look be lost. Beauty, midnight, vision dies. Let the winds of dawn that blow softly round your dreaming head such a day of welcome show, I and knocking heart may bless, find our mortal world enough. Noons of dryness find you fed by the involuntary powers. Nights of insult let you pass, watched by every human love.
When I first read that poem at 16, I didn't know enough about love, either Eros or Agape, to judge its veracity. I was simply dazzled by the poem's dark beauty. But each time I came back to it over the next 40 years, the poem seemed true to everything, happy or sad, I had learned about love in the meantime. I have had the same experience with so many of Auden's poems, which provide both a mirror for my life and a lamp to illuminate it. Auden claimed famously that poetry makes nothing happen. In the larger political sense he intended, he was probably right. But in terms of shaping the individual imagination, his poetry certainly changed my life, enlarging my sense of the world, language, and the human heart. Happy birthday, Whiston.